If Santa said ha 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 Merry Christmas instead of ho ho ho, it'd be a little creepy. It would be as though he was sarcastic about something or other. What's that you say? Too early to start talking about Santa? Hardly. It's the diner for Friday, December 1st, 2006. Welcome.
Sorry, I'm coming. All right. Here we are.
You're late!
It's the breathy white people's chorus, of course. They're here all the time now. Oh, the management thinks it's great. 8 people show up every day, eat heartily, but they just creep me out. They always manage to say the same thing together at the same time, like they have some sort of insect hive mind going on. And they're always smiling. They got that happy, shiny grooming to them. It's like people who, they make Up With People look like, you know, Barbary Coast whoremasters or something. I don't know. I came in here one day. They were all aligned at the counter. All 8 seats taken, including mine. It's not technically mine. I don't own it, but it's where I sit. And I had to stand behind one of them and cough for quite some time before he finally got the idea. And finished his meal and paid and left. But I have my seat now. I have staked it out, thank you. I've spread all my stuff about, and I am at my accustomed place at the long boomerang pattern Formica counter. Hi, folks. James Lilacs here at the diner, as usual. The old diner out on Old Highway 23, about 29-30 seconds from wherever you happen to be right at this very moment. It's December, and there's not a jot of Christmas decorations up around here, which gladdens my heart, frankly. I'm not one of those people who jumps the season, and I'm glad the diner doesn't either. Let's take a look and see what's on the menu chalkboard for today. Oh. Turkey lasagna. Must be in honor of the Pope's trip to Constantinople. Or is it Istanbul? No, it's Istanbul, not Constantinople. Right. Well, what are we going to do today? I have an idea.
It's time for the Santa Report.
No, it isn't. Too early. Doesn't really even feel all that seasonal around here, for heaven's sakes.
It's cold outside.
So what?
Excellent.
The attainment of a sub-freezing temperature and the utterly expected calendrical peregrination that ends up in December 1st, which happens every year, I should note, does not mean that it's time for a Santa report or that I feel they're not even paying attention. They've all gone back to their cherry cokes. Boys on one side of the booth, girls on the other side of the booth, one cherry coke split between two straws, so cute. Anyway, I'm not in the Christmas spirit, and I'm not going to apologize for it, for heaven's sakes. It's just the start of December. We've a long ways to go. It'll come. It will. When you're a kid, it comes easily. The very start of December tells you you're on the glide path to Christmas, and everything around you in the world tells you that it's Christmas. The songs on the radio, the decorations in the mall, everything you're doing in school. You're filled with Christmas from the moment the fork hits the plate on Thanksgiving. But when you're adult, it takes a little bit more. Well, that's fine. I mean, it'll come. I'll be driving around someday, doing my shopping. The snow will be falling, and I'll hear one of my favorite Christmas songs on the radio, and click, I'll be there. But not yet. And I'm pleased to note that the diner seems to be with me. At least it is lacking in holiday festoonery at this point. No Santas, no snowflakes, none of the other, no snowmen, because of course we're celebrating the birth of our Lord the Snowman. None of that stuff. Maybe next week. Maybe the holly boughs. Maybe the little Christmas trees. Maybe the little animatronic robots that sing Ray Charles' Rockin' Christmas when you press their foot or something like that. But for now, it just seems like an ordinary winter day, so I don't see any reason why I shouldn't do an ordinary winter thing. As I've mentioned, as you know, there are individual little jukeboxes here on all the stools at the counter and in the booths at the diner. Mine... No, well, it's not mine, it's just my accustomed place here, seems to have songs in it that are not in the other jukeboxes, and I'm not quite sure why, but that's just how it works out. And as I was here yesterday flipping through the new arrivals, because some guy shows up and stocks this thing like every other day in the dead of night, I noticed a bunch of stuff that I'd never seen before. All top 10 stuff. Top 10 hits. Top 10 hits of the year. And I'd like to play them for you. Now, you're thinking, gosh, Mr. Diner Person, I wasn't aware that you liked contemporary radio. Well, I don't. Well, I don't know. I don't listen to it much. When I'm in my car and I either listen to a station that plays deep, deep cuts from today's alternative artists, or stuff from my own heyday when there was an instinctive connection between the elements coursing in my bloodstream and what the popular musicians were singing. You know, some guy who clawed his way out of poverty in England in 1977 spoke to me, man, even though I was a middle-class kid coming out of North Dakota. We were simpatico, same wavelength, but it's not that way anymore, and that's okay. I'm middle-aged. I think it would be rather pathetic if I was connecting on an emotional level with stuff that is aimed at kids who walk around the mall jabbering on cell phones. So, what then do we have here? We have the top 10 from 1926. Of course, they didn't count them down back then. Casey Kasem was only, I believe, 21 in 1926, so he wasn't able to do it. He was on the air, I believe, but it was a small little, you know, Marconi operation somewhere in Maine. And they had top 10 lists that were assembled by sheet music sales and record sales, so they're fairly accurate. 80 years ago, what were people listening to? That's the fascinating question I have, which will probably be borne out as considerably less than fascinating once we get into it, because I haven't heard any of these. But we got them. Let's play them. Ladies and gentlemen.
Lunchtime at the Oldies.
I'm sorry, at the Oldies? Would that not be lunchtime with the Oldies? And might I also point out it's not lunchtime?
Yeah, one of them gave me the hairy eyeball. That's a start. Anyway, number 10 from 1926. And remember, 1926, this is the heart of the 20s. This is the absolute zenith of the jazz age. And what does that mean? That means America at its most muscular, strong, and confident. Skyscrapers, cars rolling off the assembly line, music infused with new and strange rhythms from other cultures, flappers losing their eyesight on cheap liquor, young men in raccoon coats with small little college pennants on the end of bamboo sticks driving around in Model T's, flivvers they called them, with slogans on the side like 23 Skidoo and Oh You Kid and Walla Walla Wombat and whatever. All that stuff. In other words, an era of alcoholism and sophistication. A wonderful time for literature. A brash new time for painting. A time when all of American arts were really starting to reach out for something new and modern and different. And the radio, this miraculous instrument of technological sophistication, was bringing to the nation the breath of the new era, the jazz age, the modern times. Number 10, Johnny Marvin, Breezing Along with the Breeze.
Knocked around all over, kinda grew up wild. My home's wherever I may be. I'm just breezing along with a breeze, trailing a rail and roaming a sea. Like the birdies that sing in the trees,
bogus.
And for once, we're in agreement there, guys. Yeah, well enough of number 10. Let's move on to number 9. Oh, Al Jolson. I love Al Jolson. Known for several things. One, of course, blackface, which would now be regarded by modern audiences with stark staring horror, as you can well imagine, and rightly so. Two for whistling. Al Jolson was an incredible whistler. Man, could that guy whistle. And three, he was in the first talking movie, what's generally regarded as the first talking movie, The Jazz Singer. And he uttered the first words spoken in a major motion picture, which were, no, they weren't. You ain't heard nothing yet. That's what people think. Actually, what he said, I think, was, wait a minute, you ain't heard nothing yet. In a sense, it was a curious thing to say for the first words in a motion picture, since people obviously had heard something. And to tell them that you ain't heard nothing yet as the first thing that they had heard, well, it's very American. At number 9, Al Jolson. I'm sitting on top of the world, just rolling along.
Just one, that's all I can wear. A bundle of money won't make you feel gay. A sweet little honey is making me say, I'm sitting on top of the world, just rolling along, just rolling along. And I'm quitting the blues of the world. I'm singing a song, just singing a song. Glory, hallelujah, I just phoned a parson. Hey, Pa, get ready to call. Just like Humpty Dumpty, I'm going up all. I'm sitting on top of the world, just rolling along, just rolling along.
Well, lovely. And without a hint of mammyism in it, too. Jolson, many of his hits degenerated into rank mammyism.
Mammy, I hear you. I hear you, Mammy. You're calling to me. You want me to come and shave your cones off. I'm getting my razor, Mammy. I'm hopping a train.
I mean, it's just on and on and on. Yes, I know. Don't send letters. I know that You Ain't Heard Nothing Yet was a reference to a 1920 hit by Al Jolson. It was his signature theme, probably before Sitting on Top of the World came along. Duh! Don't send me a chastening letter about that. Jolson's voice, though, it's interesting. It's from the era before recording devices. It's when you had to stand there on stage and project so that your voice bounced off the back wall of the theater. And consequently, there's not a great deal of inflection or variation. He's just projecting. That voice is like a javelin. And so it was for the entirety of his career. And if you've ever seen him, you can probably understand why he was such a charismatic performer. He just radiated what he was doing. And that big mouth and that big smile. He was loved. And he's dead. And mostly forgotten by most people. But not here. Not at the diner. That was number 9. Al Jolson. Sitting on top of the world. Moving right along here. Coming in the number 8 spot. Shouldn't I be doing long-distance dedications here or something? Shouldn't somebody be writing me from the grave? Sending this out to, you know, to Tryggvi Torgerson in Beulah? Anyway, number 8, 1926, George Olsen and his orchestra. We've heard George here before in the diner. George Olsen and his orchestra essayed a tune called Doin' the Raccoon, which was about a popular piece of fashion gear in the 20s. And now here he is, number 8, with Always. Sounds like F. Scott Fitzgerald trying to get into bed. There's the stairs. Up you go. Oh, you threw up again. All right, we'll mop it up later. Up you go. Take off your celluloid collar. Take off your pants. Not over your head, F. Scott. Yes, that's right. Leg by leg. Should have taken your shoes off first. I know. There you go. Would you like a bucket? I'll get you a bucket. Nighty-night, F. Scott. Oh, Zelda? Face down in the fountain. I'll go get her. Keep waiting for somebody to sing, don't you? I wonder if sometimes when these guys performed, they just had a singer standing there, and everybody would wait for him to sing, and then in the end, he just sort of smile and wave. I'm not sure what the lyrics to this would be, anyway. Huh. The 1920s don't seem to be as sophisticated as we thought. They seem rather sappy and sentimental. Well, apparently they were. We can't judge the 1920s solely from a couple of movies and the New Yorker magazine. It was a sentimental decade. It didn't look at anything like the Art Deco pictures you may have thought. Most people's houses were decorated in a style that was sort of this post-Baroque Victorian with beaded lamps and heavy fabrics everywhere, and real clean, modern look that we tend to associate with the area between the two world wars actually didn't come along in the 30s, and even then wasn't in, you know, everybody's houses. It was in the movie sets and the smart magazines. The music then was sounded like something that Mother would like to listen to as she rocked herself to sleep. Or maybe not. Let's check number 7 from 1926. Gene Austin, Bye Bye Blackbird. Oh, God.
Blackbird, blackbird, singing the blues all day, right outside of my door. Blackbird, blackbird, why do you sit and say there's no sunshine in store? All through the winter, you hung around. Now I begin to feel homeward bound. Blackbird, blackbird, gotta be on my way, where there's sunshine galore. Pack up all my cares and woe, here I go singing low. Bye, bye, blackbird. Where somebody waits for me, sugar sweet, and so is she. Bye, bye, blackbird. No one here can love and understand me. Oh, what hard luck stories they all hand me. Make my bed and light the light. I'll arrive late tonight. Blackbird, bye, bye. Bluebird, bluebird, calling me far away. I've been longing for you.
Well, I think we can cut out there before our ornithological variations take us to other hues of birds. The yellow bird, which makes him feel feverish, and the red bird, which makes him feel angry, etc. Another sappy song. Although you have to note the instrumentation is interesting. Unlike today's songs, which have a range of sounds, 10% of which you've never heard before. Think of it. How many songs have you heard that have a sound in them that you've never heard before? That never used to be an option. People knew what they were going to get. There was a standard palette of instruments, and by gum, that's what people expected, and dagnabbit, that's what they got. But this one seems rather spare. One guy singing, one piano player banging away in the background, probably with a cigarette hanging out of his mouth, and a violin player, of all things. And the violin player probably made up the part in the second or third take, and they cut it a fourth time, and the next thing you know, it's tens of thousands of dollars for the singer. Moving along. Oh. At number six, our old friend Paul Whiteman. Paul Whiteman. What a name. How apt. Paul Whiteman was known as the King of Jazz. He sort of took the title himself, like Michael Jackson calling himself the King of Pop, although nobody really argued with Whiteman at the time. As far as what they thought jazz was, well, Whiteman was it. He took the interesting forms of music bubbling below the surfaces in the clubs and homogenized them and scored them for nice, safe little instruments and presented America with a happy, bouncy, shiny version of jazz, which they believed was jazz and, you know, what the hell it was. Not really. But it was. And Paul Whiteman was known for, well, for one thing, for a concert that he put on at Carnegie Hall, I believe, in which Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue was performed by Paul Whiteman and his orchestra to a rhapsodic audience. Now, I'm not sure what this one is. Let me tell you. Oh, it's The Birth of the Blues. Oh, so the King of Jazz brings you The Birth of the Blues, number six from 1926, Paul Whiteman and his orchestra.
Cowbell!
Somebody's playing an inner tube.
What? Hold on. Hold on. Oh, come on. Oh, no, come on!
I'm sorry. I hope he paid Gershwin for that. That's all I'm saying. That may have been the first example of samples that we've ever heard. You know how those modern-day rap artists will take something from an old piece and drop it in a new one? And then claim it's, you know, an homage or something like that, so they don't have to pay royalties? That guy was quoting Gershwin all over the place, Rhapsody in Blue. Huh. You always get a lot with a Whiteman Orchestra piece, though, don't you? That thing was just all over the map. There's always a donut hole in the center where everything gets quiet, and there's just a guitar plucking around, and three guys, ghouls from the sound of it, they sounded dead and haunted and brought back to life clearly against their will, singing the lyrics. And then you've got some more instrumental stuff with tuba. Tuba, for God's sakes. And whenever I hear that stuff, whenever I hear a Whiteman tune, I always think of some black and white cartoon with a bunch of farm animals all moving in a synchronous fashion, and their eyes always have that, there are always these dead black circles with one pie slice cut out. And then when you hear the tuba part, of course, you always think of some really big fat pig tottering around on his tiny little piggy hooves, comically. And then Bosco comes in, and that's the rest of it. Well, that was the sixth most popular song of 1926. Paul Whiteman on the orchestra, The Birth of the Blues, with thanks to George Gershwin, whom I doubt was credited. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. That's all Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue. And apparently we were just supposed to know that. I'm guessing most people did. Or didn't. That's the question. Did somebody sitting in Kansas, having never heard Gershwin, only maybe read about him, listen to that and think, that's a really catchy tune. I love that Paul Whiteman guy. He's a good writer. Well, let's move right along here. I've got, I have no time. I'm almost out of time, for heaven's sakes. I've got five more left. I'll have to stop.
More music and a better variety.
I'm sorry, guys, I can't do anything about either.
You piss me off!
Don't refer to yourself in the first person singular like that, guys. It's weird. Well, if I don't have the time, we'll just run them down for you here. Number five was Ben Burney and his orchestra with Sleepy Time Gal. Number four was George Olsen again with Who. Number two was Vernon Dalhart with The Prisoner's Song. And number one for 1926 was Paul Whiteman and his orchestra again with Song of Spain. Why did I skip number three, you ask? Because it's probably the best of the ten. And it's the one that's remained to this day. Actually, if you were to start singing this in a mall at the top of your lungs, chances are somebody would know the melody. From 1926, the most popular song, minus two, I guess, Jan Garber and his orchestra, Babyface.
I didn't need a shovel, 'cause I
I just fell in love with your pretty baby face.
There you go. Music to cheerfully violate prohibition by. I love that tune. It just has an infectious spirit and cheer and bounciness to it that puts the lugubrious, pretentious number one song by Paul Whiteman to shame. Which, of course, you'll never hear because we're out of time. Oh, we might do this again next year. I have no doubt they'll put the top 10 of 1927 in, but that's a few months away. In any case, wasn't it better than White Christmas? Because we'll get to that. Thanks for dropping by, folks. This has been The Diner for Friday, December 1st, 2006. I'm James Lilacs, and we'll see you down the road.